I can't tell you how many quality manuals I've seen that are 20, 30 pages long. It really started me thinking, okay, what do I actually need? Obviously, you have to think about your documents from an audit standpoint, but think about it more from, you know, it should be like an 80-20 rule. The 20% you put on making sure it's audit ready, but the 80% to make sure that your company is going to benefit from having this document.
Welcome to the Global Medical Device Podcast, where today's brightest minds in the medical device industry go to get their most useful and actionable insider knowledge direct from some of the world's leading medical device experts and companies.
Are you a medical device company looking to streamline your quality and clinical processes? Look no further than Greenlight Guru. Greenlight Guru's all-in-one platform is specifically designed for the unique needs of the medical device industry. Their quality management software helps you maintain compliance, reduce risk, and improve quality throughout the entire lifecycle. Say goodbye to the headache of managing multiple systems and hello to a seamless, integrated solution. But that's not all. Greenlight Guru's clinical evidence management software makes it easy to manage your clinical studies from planning to execution to reporting. With real-time visibility and automated workflows, you can accelerate your time to market and ensure the highest standards of clinical evidence. And the best part is Greenlight Guru's team of industry experts is with you every step of the way, providing top-notch support and guidance to help you succeed. Don't let quality and clinical challenges hold you back. Visit www.greenlight.guru today to learn how their platform can transform your medical device development process. That's www.greenlight.guru, your partner in medical device success.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Global Medical Device Podcast. I just got on with a meeting that was, I think we just kind of left this on the calendar. We recorded an episode last week with Devin Campbell, I should say, from Product. Thank you for being with us today, by the way. So we had this already on the calendar just as a plan B. I showed up not expecting, you know, anyone to actually be here, but Devin said, well, I'll let you go ahead and take the reins, Devin. Tell us what your idea is.
All right. So my idea here was that you've been doing this for a little while now since you took over the reins, and you've been doing all these podcasts for the Global Medical Device Podcast. And I thought it'd be kind of fun to turn the tables on you. And instead of you asking all the questions, give somebody else a chance to ask some questions and let us, the listeners, know a little bit more about you and about what you've learned through this journey. So, and in full disclosure, did not share any of this idea with him before the call. I came up with it over the weekend. I was like, yes, let's do this. I'll go spring and autumn and see if he'll jump for it. And he jumped completely for it. So yeah, that's kind of the idea. With no preparation, you're not ready. We're just gonna launch right into it, and we're gonna ask you some questions. So what I was thinking was, I was reflecting that you've been doing this for a little bit, and I asked you over the weekend, you told me your first episode when you were introduced as a co-host was 240. That was a while ago. And your first episode as the host was episode 257, Future of Cybersecurity. So just dropped 335. So you're coming up pretty close on 100 interviews in a few weeks.
Crazy to think about.
In that whole 100, no one's interviewed you yet. So what I thought would be kind of fun is to kind of go through this exercise I call five things. So, and I'm not going to like spin me or my company or anything else right now. My company is Product. You can listen to other podcasts that I've done with Greenlight, and you can learn about the company and what we do. But if you look at our logo, it's a Fibonacci sequence. So you'll see one small element of the same size, and then another slightly larger element that's twice, it's 1 + 1 = 2, right? And then the next element is 3 and then 5. And so it's a Fibonacci sequence. It's 5 elements, 2 smaller things, 2 slightly medium things, but one a little bit bigger than the other, and then 1 really big thing. And what I would love to do is to go through with you and have you reflect on your last almost 100 episodes. You can drop this whenever you choose to drop it. Maybe it'll be post 100, maybe it'll be pre 100. I don't care.
Sure.
Just for fun. But let's think through, like, you've talked to a lot of people and you've had opportunity to sit and reflect. And I know that when you and I record, when we hit stop and we're done recording, we don't stop talking, right?
Yeah.
We're product development, medical device nerds. Like, we get into this and we keep talking even when the recording stops. So I'm sure you've had really, really cool learning opportunities for you personally over the last 100 episodes. So what I'd like you to do, thinking about the five things spirit, I'd love you to share with me and your listeners. Let's think through product development first, like developing medical devices. Yeah.
If I could say, just before we go into that, I would kind of like to share just a little bit about how I came to the podcast, because you've got my wheels thinking, but just about that.
Hold on. Yeah, let me do a better job hosting.
No, no.
Clearly, I'm a horrible host. Before we jump into things, I'd love to know a little bit more about you and how you found yourself in this position. And then let's talk about five things that you've learned about product development.
Absolutely. And they may tie together, believe it or not. So my wheels have been turning ever since I got on, because I knew that record button was going to be hit. So this is me stalling as I think. So when I came to Greenlight Guru, I have to go way back in time. At least for me and my age, it feels like a long time ago. I came to Greenlight Guru after being a project manager for a drug delivery combination product company. I loved the job that I was doing. I really did. And at one point,
what did you love about that kind of work?
What I loved about it was I had finally gotten to where I could see all of the different elements of a project coming together. You know, previous to that, as a manufacturing engineer, I was doing the IQ, OQ, PQ. It was typically on the back end of a product as it was developed. Took on a project with more of a regulatory focus. So I helped, I believe it was about 250 class 2 medical devices get up to speed with UDI right before the implementation date. And there was a lot of pressure. So I got to interface more with management and so forth. Well, from that, I got my PMP, became a project manager, got into product development, started working, you know, in the project, doing CAD and so forth, but eventually became the project manager. And I finally got to where I could sit with the CEO. He would say, express his concerns. I sat with the pharma partners. They would express their concerns. And I would go home and cry on my pillow, but then come back with a new, renewed vigor. We're going to solve these problems. And so that was very interesting. And I really loved that. So fast forward a little bit, 2020 came around and I looked at my project. And I came home at one point. There were three main projects they were working on. I told my wife, you know, don't panic. If I own the company, I would fire Etienne. Not because Etienne's doing a bad job. I just have looked at it. I know the other project managers. I know where they stand. I know some of the issues we're facing with supply chain. And I personally, I think it would make the most financial sense to cut Etienne's project. Not Etienne per se, but what else are we going to do with him? So I said, let's come up with a backup plan. So I said, these are all the things that we want to do if Etienne is let go. I'm looking at it as if I'm a consultant for me and my wife and our family. I said, these are our plans. We have phase 1, phase 2, phase 3. And I think almost everybody should have this no matter what, because you just never know. And I said, okay, this is our plan. Now we're going to shelve that plan. And I'm going to go back to work and I'm going to be the most valuable employee they've ever seen. That's the goal, so that we don't have to use this plan. And at the end of that year, they did look at me and they said, you know, Etienne, we want to give you a raise. I talked to everybody in the company, all the different departments, and we couldn't pin one specific thing on you, but everybody said he's very valuable and all these. And it's weird to toot my horn like that. I don't mean that. The point is, I wanted to draw a lesson from that is have your plan in place, but be the most valuable employee you can so that you don't have to use that plan. Anyway, okay. That happened at the same time that was going on towards the end of that year. I was doing a little bit of research and that's how I came across Greenlight Guru. Well, I did what anybody would do. I reached out to the author, right? And I said, Jessica Lyons, that was a great article. Reached out to her on LinkedIn. Great article, really appreciate it. And just that was it. Not thinking anything of it. The very next day she posted, we had a great quarter last year, or last quarter. And by the way, we're hiring. And I said, hiring? So I just looked at it and was curious. And it all the different things I did just when I was at home or previously. If anybody's listening to this who's known me for a long time, you might remember my Monday memo that I used to publish every week for people who were really discouraged in their jobs. I had about 150 people at a previous company that I tried to encourage every week based on the feedback they gave me. So anyway, this looked like all of those different things that I was already doing on the side. So I thought, that's interesting. I don't want to leave my job, but I'm curious to know more about this. And so I got into this, and this is very long-winded. I didn't mean to get this long-winded on you. People don't usually take the reins off for me, so you gotta bear with me for a second.
Right.
We got there. I got into that interview, and it was really fascinating with the company, the people, and I started doing medical device guru work, which is where, just for those of you who are not familiar with it, Greenlight Guru is a quality management system company that has a unique department called the Medical Device Gurus, where you are actually working with companies to help them onboard the software, one thing, but also to understand regulations to a certain extent, right, and just kind of be a Sherpa.
Yeah.
So that's what I was doing. So to answer your question, we're the long way, but we finally got there. The founder of the company put his name is John Spear. He put something on my calendar and it simply said, "I have an idea." And so I looked at that and I thought, what? I've never met the founder. I don't know what this is about. Cleaned up my desk. I'm like, all right, never know what's going to happen. On Monday, went into that meeting and he said, "Have you ever thought about being a podcast host?" And I swung my podcast mic into the frame. I said, "Actually, I have." He said, "Well, I'd like you to be my co-host." So I started co-hosting with him. I want to say that was November of 2021. Mm-hmm. And he finally just kind of had me be the host by myself. And I believe it was January or February of 2022. And it was with Chris Gates. You mentioned it was 257. I don't remember. I guess that probably is the episode number. But it was with Chris Gates on cybersecurity. And there's no one who could have been a better first guest, because Chris is just, he goes above and beyond. He's fantastic. He's been in the industry for 50 years. So I'll never forget that first interview with him. It was really good.
I remember when, so I did about a dozen or so, maybe a little bit more episodes with John, right? So I know John pretty well. Been on the Global Medical Device podcast several times. But I do remember before you had even co-hosted anything, I remember him calling a meeting for him, because he and I would talk rather regularly, just text each other and just talk. But I remember him pulling you in. I remember him telling me about you and then pulling you in. I don't know if you remember that conversation, but we had like this very small kind of like, "Hey, I'm thinking about doing this one thing and maybe starting to bring a podcast like co-host in. You're going to want to meet him because, you know, you're going to want to do some podcasts with him eventually too." And then you and I got to meet like before you even did your first one.
Yeah.
Okay. So you brought us to today. Great. Thank you for that, for sharing your journey with us. I appreciate that. My favorite part was the crying in your pillow part. I appreciate your honesty and your willingness to be vulnerable there, because this is a tough space that we work in. And yeah, there's a lot of times you might want to come home and cry in your pillow and then rally and get back to work the next day. So for all of your listeners who are dealing with hard things in the product development space for medical devices, let's think through, like, help us benefit from what you've learned and what you've had a chance to reflect on over the last 100-ish episodes. And you've had plenty of time to stall now. So I saw what you were doing there. You've got no more excuses. It's time to start talking. So give me like two small like lessons you feel like you've learned in talking to all of these different people.
Yeah. So based on what you said, actually, you kind of already mentioned it. Being vulnerable and going home, crying your pillow, that's a side thing. You know, everybody deals with things differently. But the thing that I would say was really valuable, and that I probably wasn't good enough during my previous leading up to being a project manager, was being vulnerable actually at work. And not necessarily about your feelings or emotions, although I suppose there's a place for that. Really being vulnerable about the state of the project. And this is something, I know this probably feels a little subtle, or maybe it's hard to value this if you can't really wrap your head around it. But I've talked to regulatory professionals, I've talked to product development professionals, I've talked to CEOs and founders who are going to be talking to investors and so forth. And I've talked to investors actually from that just a curious perspective. They all value honesty and vulnerability. Now, as humans, I want to show you my best side. I want to show you the projects on track.
The question is it even really your best side, right? It's a little bit like social media. Like a lot of people choose to put an imagined version of themselves on social media, but it's not always. It's always like rainbows and unicorns and everything's wonderful. But I agree. Like a lot of times, especially in a working environment, you know, you try to, you know, soldier forward and like really make it everything look great. And then kind of, you know, fake it till you make it and hope that things kind of come along. And I agree with you. I mean, it's been kind of my experience too in the past, like, and it's my style to be super vulnerable and really authentic and real. It doesn't serve anyone any benefit to parade.
Right. And kind of the flip side of that, when you're talking to your team, I'll give you a specific example I had one time. I remember being in a conference room. We were working on a certain UDI direct part marking. And one of my teammates, her name was Jennifer. She was fantastic. I still wish I had her on my team. She said, well, if I was a doctor, I would want it this way. And I said, yes. And in some ways, I feel good about this. In some ways, I don't. But I said, listen, anything right now we're going with Fred, is it Fred Crosby's, if I remember his name correctly, Quality is Free, author of Quality is Free. So his definition of quality is it meets the standard. I said, anything above that is gold plating. And so if it meets the standard right now, our goal is to get back on the market so that these things aren't held up. And anything else above that is gold plating. And sometimes as engineers, we don't know when to stop. And someone who can actually say, this is our stopping point. I know you want to do better. Or I'm kind of applying it as a flip side. So be honest, be vulnerable, say, this is where we are. But as a manager, sometimes you say, hey guys, we're not going this any further enough. Past this. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's tough.
I used the gold analogy as well. In my past, I was running product development for a pretty good sized company. And I had an engineer working for me, and he had a tendency as an engineer myself to like over engineer things a little bit. And I would always have to bring him back. We got to the point where he would start to work on something and I would just look at him and say, golden toilet. That's all I need to say. And no one else would really know what that meant. But between him and I, it meant like you've designed a toilet. It does its job. It does not need to be gold, right? It does not need to have all these different fancy things. It has one job, an important job, and it does it really well. We're done.
Yeah.
Right. So whenever I would just say golden toilet to him, he'd be like, okay, fine. And he would just stop.
You're kind of describing a meta skill. Actually, I don't want to go too far down that path, but I remember in my career, we would call something a red couch. If we knew this isn't the place to talk about it, we would simply say red couch. There was a red couch where we would just air our grievances. But if we were in a conference room with certain people, you say red couch. And they're like, okay, this is not the place. It's for the red couch. Anyway, it's just interesting. Sometimes it's important.
I'm seeing all sorts of hashtags exploding out of the LinkedIn posts that will come from this. Yeah. I'm seeing hashtag red couch. I'm seeing hashtag golden toilet. People are not going to know what to think. Okay. So you gave me two. I'll take those as the first two. So you owe me three more.
Okay.
Following Fibonacci, those first two were of about the same size. Give me the next one that should be kind of about, you know, the sum of a learning or a reflection from the last 100 episodes or so. That's about twice as big as those two.
Okay.
Twice as important.
Okay. When I think about product development, because that's kind of what you led with, the thing that there's a theme that is recurring over and over, and I don't know how to verbalize this into a single learning, but human factors and usability, it seems to be a continually misunderstood or misapplied or not applied profession in the product development of medical devices. So a lot of times we see a problem, we jump to a conclusion, we go ahead and fix the problem in our mind, and we fall in love with that technology. So a phrase that was instilled in me kind of early on in my career was, The heart of the problem is the seed of the solution. And if you've heard very many of my episodes, particularly when we're talking about usability, I use that phrase a lot. The heart of the problem is the seed of the solution. When I'm talking to new product development engineers, I always tell them, do not fall in love with your technology. Fall in love with the problem. Just obsess about the problem and think about the problem. Because as a company, so you could zoom in, you could look at the engineer, but you could talk about the company. If I, let's say I want to help cuts. So I am a 3M. I am a Band-Aid. We are a Band-Aid company, and that's what we do. We make Band-Aids. Well, what if Band-Aids are no longer, whatever, they're displaced by, I don't know, surgical glue or whatever. Now, are you no longer a Band-Aid company, or are you a wound healing company? You need to focus on what you actually do. So part of the problem is the seed of the solution is the piece of advice I would give when it comes to product development. Curious though, I it's always my temptation to turn the tables back on you because that's my comfort zone, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
I'm a blank slate. I have zero thought on product development and medical devices. Definitely none whatsoever.
Incredible control, I see.
I'm withholding and restraining everything back. So I'll echo a similar observation. I do think that a lot of times we don't pay as much attention to it as we should, right? It's kind of like, it falls a little bit like into like risk management side of things, where I see people doing risk management thinking it's a checkbox activity we do at the end of the process, right? Same thing like, oh, we're getting toward the end. We need to do some human factors. Like, oh, well, we probably should do a formative. Like, you should have done a formative a really long time ago, right? Or, well, we talked to a few users. How can we write that up and turn that into a formative study? But just like risk management, I do see human factors, usability engineering as a critically important and underappreciated, if I could just be really honest about it, like aspect of the product development journey. And again, just like risk, they are things that need to be considered very early to help set the stage so you've got a great product development process to be able to be following and help you bring not just safe and effective products to market, but products that people love using. It's going to be hard to get that if you don't really appreciate the usability side of things and the human factors side of things really, really early. Okay. Yeah. Well, I just echoed back your same words back to you. It's great podcast host learnings I've been getting from watching and listening you. Okay. You got two more.
Okay.
Share with your eager audience.
I'm going to go with the quality for a moment then. So quality management system, obviously it's a bread and butter of what we do at Greenlight Guru, but kind of moving away from even just that, you know, I've worked in several companies where we have different types of quality management systems set up. And one piece of information I would say is we talk about an EQMS and we talk about a QMS, and those are different things in my mind. So if your EQMS, hope nobody shoot me for saying this, EQMS is your document management system. It's where the files go. It's where the words are stored. The actual quality management system is the words on the page. Whether you're a paper system or you're an electronic system, it's the words on the page. It's the ideas. And one of the things that I think we forget is when we're putting those words on the page, who are we doing it for? A lot of times, companies are doing it for the auditor, for the inspector. We are just basically copying the regulations and sending, just trying to set ourselves up for a happy audit, which is great. But we also have to think about, are we doing this for our company where our company can actually read these and understand these documents? And I can't tell you how many quality manuals I've seen that are 20, 30 pages long. Steve Gompertz from QRX Partners in Minneapolis, he showed me his trifold quality manual that meets the standards, been through many FDA inspections. And that started evolving my thinking. It really started me thinking, okay, what do I actually need? Obviously, you have to think about your documents from an audit standpoint, but think about it more from, you know, it should be like an 80-20 rule. The 20% you put on making sure it's audit ready, but the 80% to make sure that your company is going to benefit from having this document. So whether that's having a trifold quality manual, your work instructions being a video instead of words on a page, or even just an audio file or something like that, can still be audited, can still be listened to and examined and meet that standard. But now it's actually benefiting your company. You're working a lot more streamlined. So that's the big thing that I think, talking over and over and over again about quality management systems and setting those things up, my mind has sort of evolved to think instead of the typical plop down 40 SOPs on the new hire's desk to break his spirit, to see if he's really going to be able to learn everything or does he have what it takes? And he does the read and understand, which I really don't agree with anymore. I think more of a learning as you go and learn in a way that actually sticks.
Love it. One of the things I like to teach our clients at Product, you know, as we're developing documents, we're an infrastructure for them. You know, we do it in such a way that we want them to be able to be independent on their own and like know how to do things and not like have to lean on an advisor to come in and teach it to them. We push into like philosophically as we're working with them to say, when you're starting to write your own SOPs and work instructions, you don't write them for right now, right? Assume wild success for your company and everyone goes and gets to do wonderful things and new people get hired or you move up so high in the company. Write the document for a naive, scared, younger version of you who's going to be hired in 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Write the document for them, not for you right now with your knowledge. Write what you would be teaching of a younger version of you. It's kind of the same idea, right? Like make it meaningful, make it impactful, and not just to meet the regulations or to meet, because regulatory told us we have to do this, we have to do it. And quality engineer said we have to do this, we have to do it. It's the wrong reason to do it.
Right. And just to kind of, if I could just add on to one of the things you said about as a consultant, when you build out this, you want to do it this way. A piece of advice I would give companies is look for a consultant who's willing to work themselves out of a job, as you've kind of described. I mean, yeah,
you say that all the time.
Yeah. That's my dad told me that when I was a teenager, you know, learn to work yourself out of a job and you'll never be replaceable. It's just like, that doesn't make any sense, but okay. So
I'm ready for one more. I'm ready for the piece de resistance.
Something I've learned.
What's the big thing over the last 100 episodes or so?
I don't know if this is MedTech specific, but one thing I've learned from having traveled, so they've sent me to a lot of conferences now as well. I've talked to lots of people. So
I got to meet one person here in Boston at the road show when I was on the panel.
It was fantastic.
That was great fun.
And I've learned that people are people wherever you go. And I'll expand on that a little bit. I've developed a mantra after going to these different networking events, conferences, trade shows, and something that I recommend everybody. It will expand your learning. It will also expand your teaching, which will expand your learning. It's a vicious cycle, or that good to great. It's a continuous cycle. So the mantra that I have is learn, lead, and love. So I want to learn from those a few steps ahead of me, lead those a few steps behind me, and love the people around me. You know, I don't really have room in my life for people that I can't truly love anymore. Like, I hate to say that, but I love people, but I'm pickier than I used to be. So when I network, it's more than just getting that connection on LinkedIn. So what is that? You know, it's sometimes we think, oh, that guy has so many, he's got so many connections. Well, are they real connections? How many people could he go in person and actually hug and that other person want to have been hugged by him? You know, and I could name off a handful of people, you know, maybe half a dozen. If I really thought about it, maybe I could think of more of those people, but people who I would really enjoy, even if we didn't talk business, MedTech never came up. I could go to Minneapolis and find some of those people. I could go to Nashville. I could go to Phoenix, Arizona. Now that having been those, I've had some real connections. Well, how do you do that? Well, there's a couple things that I recommend. Number one is be genuinely curious. Assume the person in front of you knows something worth listening to. That's one thing. And it's actually something I really respect about you, Devin. I was excited to get on this call to hear what you would teach me. And you actually genuinely seem to want to have listen to what I have to say. And I'm like, not sure why, but it's pretty cool. So that's one of the main things I've learned over my travels is to really, that network is a buzzword, but make friendships. And I think that will go a much longer way than just trying to get your business card in as many of those bowls as possible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we like the way we use a similar phrase at Product where we like to say that we're heart forward, right? So we're hands on and heart forward, right? And get involved, but like lead with the heart, not necessarily just with the mind. Mind will follow with it. You can't go anywhere without it. So it's,
I like that.
Yeah, it's a very similar philosophy, I think. And I would hope that you feel that you know that you could also come to Boston.
Of course, yes.
There's lots of people here for that. cool. So, I mean, if you like reflect on all the things that you've learned and you sharing this last little bit with me, I can see it in your work. Right, I can see it in the way that you ask questions and the questions that you ask of people that you're talking to. You know, it's not just like I got to do another interview today and edit it and publish it and get this out. I mean, you ask questions from a place of caring, right? and with a sense of empathy for the people that you're talking to, which I think is why you're pretty good at what you're doing. If I could pat you on the shoulder just a little bit there. So reflecting on all of it, and you gave us five things, and I was trying to keep us like very product development centric because that's my happy place.
Sure.
So I'm being selfish and wanting to talk about product development stuff. But if we took those guardrails off and wanted to expand on like one more kind of idea, and I wanted to be very specific, you can think through different conversations you've had in the last couple of years doing this work, this important work that you're doing now, which, by the way, is very important. I hope that you reflect and understand the importance of what you do, hosting these podcasts and putting out this information. And John Spear before you, like, this is a great resource, especially for new folks to our industry. And I know because when I'm on, I get tons of calls too afterwards, and people reach out and have feedback. And I know it makes a difference to a lot of people. So I hope that you're proud of yourself for the contribution you're having. So let's contribute just a little bit more. So taking the product development guardrail off, you could talk about risk management. We could talk about, you know, any number of huge topics in our field. Is there a particular thing that you would sit down with an emerging entrepreneur in the medical device space and you just have a few minutes to sit down over coffee and you say, you know what, there's one thing I want you to keep in mind as you move forward on this amazing journey? What might you say to that person?
Oh man, that's a really good question. And first of all, I want to thank you for the kind words. I don't always think about, sometimes I get nervous to think about how many people listen to this podcast. So I don't think about it as much as maybe I should, but I appreciate you bringing that up. And if I've done any good, I feel like I've stood on the shoulders of giants like John Spear and others who've come before me. So first of all, thank you for that. If I was to answer that question, if I was to sit down with an emerging entrepreneur to discuss, you know, one piece of advice I would give them.
Based on what you've learned doing this work.
Yeah.
To so many people.
Right. Yeah. And borrow from their credibility, obviously. I mean, it's been fantastic. One thing that I've learned is, and I'll kind of preface this by saying, I've spoken with not only regulatory professionals and product development professionals, but the regulators themselves at times. And I suppose if I was to talk to that emerging entrepreneur, I would tell them, you are the expert in your specific niche. So you need to own that with respect towards everyone else around you, obviously. What I mean by that is, let's just say, I don't know, I don't want to use the Band-Aid example, but just some example. If you are thinking about the regulations and you're monitoring those regulations, you're building out your regulatory strategy, how I'm going to get this to market. And I think about that as the Stephen Covey's begin with the end in mind. You're building out that strategy and now you work backwards. How am I even going to build the product? Who is this for based on an overarching strategy? Now you can't know. Sometimes it's like, well, which one comes first? All that said, you think about those things and then you think about the regulations and don't look at that as, okay, now I have to go, it's electric. I've got to go do 60601. Well, that's not a good example because that, you know, that is a very established standard. There are some things that are still emerging and changing. So you come up against something, you say, oh, why is this the way it is? Well, maybe you are a special case. Maybe, you know, be humble about it. Maybe not. Maybe you're just a little bit arrogant, but maybe you're a special case that it doesn't apply. Or maybe that regulation, nobody's hit on that specific and it's time for it to change. And in the case of cybersecurity, for example. And so,
rapidly, yeah.
And right. Or AI. Exactly. AI, machine learning, all these different things. Think about those different things. And the thing that never, until talking to all these people, it never occurred to me that you as a medical device professional and entrepreneur have the ability to make change from a regulatory standpoint. You could potentially change the pathway to market at some point. And so keep that in mind. And I'm going to borrow from what you said in our last episode, stay humble, but also consider that you could affect those changes. So own the product and be the expert in your specific niche and think about that path forward, the way you have to follow those regulations, but also how those regulations could change based on the knowledge if you apply it the way you should. So I don't know if I hope I was able to encapsulate that. But in my mind, I look at the world as it's not set in stone. And so think about it from that perspective.
A lot of gray space.
Right.
And a lot of opportunity to do good if you choose to grab the opportunity.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely. Expert in your space. I mean, one way to kind of look at it, maybe a different way to say what I think you're saying, you know, you're a subject matter expert in your very specific niche, and you are influenced by regulations. We can't not be influenced by regulations in our space. But, you know, maybe a crude way to say it is like not to be a victim of the regulation, right? To say, oh, I have to do it. This kind of sucks. I got to do this because of this, but it doesn't quite make sense for my little niche. Well, rather than just, well, I'm going to do the best I can. It is an opportunity to make it better and help influence those regulations for the next person that is trying to bring something in your niche, like together, or maybe has a similar problem, but different niche. And there are actually lots of opportunities for people to get involved in helping move regulations forward.
I mean, yeah.
Lots of opportunities. Be able to do
yeah, that. buried in my assumption or my statement that you should be willing and looking for ways to change those is the assumption that you're reading them and that you understand them. And so that's a piece of advice I give for young product development engineers is read regulations. That's really where I think you should start. And it's actually how I got my start towards Greenlight Guru. I started reading our SOPs and I thought, is this really required? This seems crazy. You know, I mean, this is going to delay my project by, I don't know, 3 months, you know? And so I go to the standard, I'm like, it's not in there, you know, and it's intentionally vague. And maybe it's there for a reason. That's another, it's, you kind of have to counter that advice of be a rebel with don't move fences that you don't know why or who put them there. So there's a couple things to think about, but absolutely. Yeah. Read those regulations.
I used to be one of those engineers. And I'm sure that a few of your listeners might remember these days. I would always carry around a pocket 21 CFR.
Yeah.
In my, you know, little pocket version in my pocket. And when I would butt heads with a less than flexible quality engineer or quality representative on any of the projects I'm working on, say, oh, well, you can't do that because the regulations say so. Mm-hmm. It would just get me so wrong. And I would say, okay, well, I'd pull it out and say, show me where the regulation says that. And it doesn't say that. Our SOPs, right? Like to your earlier comment, right? Our quality management system, the words on the pages, not the pages themselves. The words on the pages, that's our interpretation of how we're going to meet that regulation. And that's where it is. So there's the opportunity to make it better.
Yeah.
Right? You don't even have to necessarily even change the regs. You can change your response to the regulations internal to the company to make things faster, more effective, more efficient, make more sense.
Yeah. That word standard sometimes I think is overused in our industry to where we only look at it like, oh, what piece of paper is he talking about? When I like to use the classical definition of standard, and that is the normal expected behavior. When in reality, it's okay to go above the standard. It's okay to go beyond the standard with your SOPs if you have a good reason to do those things. So,
or to go less, you can justify exemptions. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. Well, hey, this was a lot of fun for me. I was excited to be able to spring this idea on you with zero preparation on your part. And I hope that I did an okay job. I think you did a great job answering my questions and had a lot of fun. So I appreciate your willingness to to explore this journey with me and to hit record and just leap into the unknown and see where I was going to take it. So
absolutely. No, you did a great job. If you ever want a job as a podcast host, I'm pretty sure you would be a fantastic host. So thank you so much. Really appreciate it. All right. We'll see you all next time. Everybody take care.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, can I ask a special favor from you? Can you leave us a review on iTunes? I know most of us have never done that before, but if you're listening on the phone, look at the iTunes app, scroll down to the bottom where it says leave a review. It's actually really easy. Same thing with the computer. Just look for that leave a review button. This helps others find us and it lets us know how we're doing. Also, I'd personally love to hear from you on LinkedIn. Reach out to me. I read and respond to every message because hearing your feedback is the only way I'm going to get better. Thanks again for listening and we'll see you next time.